Good afternoon, everybody. It's Monday, March 21st, 2011, and welcome to House Committee on Rules. And we are going to just give you a heads up that the two work sessions that are identified in House Bill 2775 and House Bill 2804 are going to be moved to next Monday, March 28th. And let's open a public hearing on HCR 19. And we have, Representative Widener's bill. He's not here, but they have David Evans, Greg Leo, and Wayne Brady. If you would all come up.
Would you like to?
Yes, would you give an introduction, please?
Mr. Chairman, HCR 19 declares February 6th, 2011, the 100th anniversary of his birth as Ronald Reagan Day in Oregon.
Wayne, if you want to start, or whoever wanted to start first.
For the record, my name is Greg Leo. I live at 9318 Champouy Road in Aurora, Oregon. And I had the opportunity in 1980 to be the media director for Reagan for Oregon, and then worked for 8 years for Ronald Reagan in Washington, D.C. Here in support of House Concurrent Resolution 19, which is an absolute wonderful bill that describes the contributions of the 40th President of the United States. It's also my great honor today to have with me Diana Evans. Now, Diana really chaired pretty much everything Reagan in Oregon had ever happened, 1968 all the way through the re-election in 1984. So she is the original Reagan chair and is here today in support of the bill. Diana?
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I can...
Yeah, Diana, if you'd introduce yourself, please, for the record. If you just identify yourself for the record.
Oh, Diana Evans, Salem, Oregon. It's a great honor to be here to talk about somebody that I incidentally ran into some time ago and became very interested in his thoughts and thinking before I ever really got involved in this. It turned out that in 68, which seems like a long time ago, I was very entranced by what he was saying, and it was kind of out of sync with what was going on in the other parts of the political world. And I went to Kansas City in 76, and I was a Reaganite, and we, of course, lost to the president and so on. But at that time, I met a number of people who felt the same way about Ronald Reagan that I did. And subsequently, we came home and talked about it. And then, of course, in 80, when he was nominated, there was quite a group that was already ready for him. And one of the Reaganites called me and asked me if I would be the chairman of the Reagan campaign in Oregon. I'm not a political figure, really, but I had made a lot of contacts in the course of my time, and because I've been interested in politics. Subsequently, I became the chairman, and we won in 80, and we won again in 84. And that's a very rewarding feeling, and I think it was very good for the country.
Mr. Chairman, just as a postscript, I put into the record a copy of the Time magazine, July 28, 1980 edition, which is the Long March, which is actually a story about Diana and her efforts starting in her garage with about three other ladies, is how it all started. And it's amazing in politics how a few committed people can make a huge difference in the outcome of the nation and the world. So it's an honor to have worked for Diana. She was a tough boss, by the way. You know, things ran like a railroad when you worked for Diana Evans, so we appreciate her coming today.
I'm Wayne Brady. I'm a volunteer for the Oregon Taxpayers Association. And I don't know how many of you can remember what was going on in the late 70s and 1980, but I do vividly. The country was in decline. We had high interest rates, high unemployment, and gas lines, government mandated thermostat settings, 55 mile an hour speed limits. I remember driving down to downtown Los Angeles and it was dark, you know, not the city that I was used to. The country was in decline, the Soviet Union was expanding. It was a very depressing time. And then Ronald Reagan got elected. And he inspired us. You know, that in itself did a lot. And then lowering taxes and ending price controls and so on. The country came out of all this and was transformed into one that was not in decline anymore, but gaining influence across the world. He won his second election as president in 49-state landslide. And his tough foreign policy and military buildup helped us win the Cold War. So he put the economy on a path for prosperity for decades, and he was a great president. And I urge you to support HDR 19. I would like to see every February 6th celebrated as Ronald Reagan Day. Thank you.
Is there any questions?
Yep. Comment, if I may? Thank you, Chair Olson. I did not get an opportunity to vote for Ronald Reagan in his first election for president because I wasn't old enough. However, I did get to vote for him in his re-election. So unlike some of the people on the panel, I have actually voted for Ronald Reagan. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else out there would like to come forward and speak on HDR 19? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on HDR 19 and open a work session on HDR 19.
Mr. Chair, I move HDR 19 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Chair Hunt moves HCR 19 to the House floor with a to adopt recommendation. Amy, would you call the roll?
No discussion?
This is a discussion.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Freeman is correct, but I would note that one of the hallmarks of President Reagan was his pragmatism, his ability to be pragmatic in the face of changing conditions. As governor of California, he made a number of decisions that would probably not meet the normal litmus test today for Republicans because they were necessary. When he was president of the United States, he favored tax reductions early in his term. Later on in his term, he realized that they'd gone too far, and he asked that taxes be raised, and in fact, they were. Reagan took positions internationally that turned out to be extremely important for the future of the United States. As far as I could tell, not related to an ideological position of any kind, but rather to the pragmatic position of what was necessary to win the Cold War, and was quite successful in many of those endeavors. I'm very happy to support the resolution today, recognizing that President Reagan was, above all else, a pragmatist in his approach to government, taking conditions as they existed into account when he took positions and supporting positions that even when there were times that they didn't conform strictly to his own ideological views, because they turned out to be correct for the times.
Thank you. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a bit too young to remember all of the Reagan experience. I also was not very politically engaged at that time. I was surviving middle school at that point. But I did have the pleasure upon his death. I was moved at that time to something just told me that I had to go. So I went with a friend on a road trip down there to the library. I wanted to see the library, but it turned out because his casket was returning that it was closed for the week. So the most that I could accomplish while I was down there was to line the streets with thousands of other people as his coffin made its way back to the library for burial. That was really something. We sat out there for hours waiting, and the Air Force One flew by, and then eventually the hearse came by, and all those people had joined us. They had, many people had driven long distances to simply line the street to see a president who had already passed, just to simply watch his hearse go by. He was a tremendous spokesman for freedom. And part of me wistfully wishes that maybe I was a little older, that I could have really enjoyed that presidency and his presence while he was still with us. But I'm pleased to support this measure today.
Anyone else? Representative Falvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel compelled to say something now. I was old enough to vote against Ronald Reagan, and having to do it over again, I probably still would have voted against him. I disagreed with a lot of his policies, but also admired many of the things he did do and accomplish, and think that any president of the United States deserves the respect of its people. I will be voting in favor of this measure, and happily to do so.
Okay. Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Wingard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Excuse me.
Representative Raymond?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. HCR 19, having received a majority vote, passes, and we'll sign that to Representative Widener. Okay. And I'm going to close hearing then on HCR 19, a work session. Diane, thank you very much for all the work that you've done with that, too, as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, going to have a public hearing. Open that up on HCR 14. Jim, if you'd share what that is.
Mr. Chair, HCR 14 adopts the Code of the West as a model of conduct in the state of Oregon.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson and Co-Chair Hunt, and the great committee members of the Rules Committee. I appreciate the chance to be in front of you today. So I've been asked, what the heck am I doing? I'm going to take a couple minutes and explain what I'm doing, then we'll actually get into the resolution. Last summer, I was lucky enough to be chosen to attend a leadership training in Colorado Springs along with some fellow legislators. And one of the takeaways from that training was the fact that each of us get here with a public opinion poll or an election that has people supporting us by at least 50%. We get here as a group, and we gather as a legislature, and our approval rating is somewhat less than that, and that troubles me. Having had the opportunity to serve with you all last session, I know all of you to be good people here doing what you believe is the right thing for the state of Oregon and the people you represent. And what's troubling to me is the fact that we're all here trying to do the right thing, and the people out there think for some reason we're not. And I thought of, how could I help shine a positive light on the work that we do and the people that we are? And I looked around and saw how at least one other legislature had done this. And for that reason, I thought, you know what, this would be worth doing. Now, I know there's been some comments already made about the cost of passing legislation and the cost of drafting legislation. I did check, and I was assured that if, in fact, I did not do this piece of legislation, that we would not have sent anybody home for the day and not paid them their salary. So I got that part pretty well figured out. And also, I wanted to get for the record that in total, outside of my role as part of the caucus leadership, the number of bills I brought forward this time is 8. This bill was typed in full description with the different state in it is all, and that's what was changed and retyped. So I'm quite sure there wasn't a whole lot of money or time put into putting this together. However, the magnitude of what we're doing here could be extreme and be very valuable. So again, the intent is to bring a positive light onto the work that we do here and the people that who come here every day and try to do what's good for the state of Oregon. So I'm not going to read all the resolution. I do want people to, again, understand why I'm doing this, and the intent is to better help people understand that we all are here committed to doing good things. So one part of the resolution reads, whereas those principles include aspirations to live with strength, courage, self-sufficiency, compassion, hard work, independence, and a commitment to the highest moral character. Now, who amongst the legislators we work with doesn't fit that description? This is who we are. I'm going to read the 10 principles, and I want you to think about those you work with, those you call your friends in this building and your colleagues, and the way you approach the work that you do in this building, and tell me at the end of this if there's any of these that don't fit you and the people you work with to some degree. So number one, live each day with courage. Number two, take pride in your work. Number three, always finish what you start. Number four, do what has to be done. Number five, be tough, but be fair. Number six, when you make a promise, keep it. Number seven, ride for the brand. Number eight, talk less, say more. Number nine, remember that some things are not for sale. And number 10, know where to draw the line. And with that, I'm going to draw the line on my testimony, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Well, Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate the sentiment behind the bill. I'll have you know that when you asked me to sign on to this bill and I read it, I got a little stuck on number 7 because I didn't know what it meant. And I had to do a little research. It actually forced me to go online and learn a little bit about the Cowboy Code and some other things. I was teaching a film class and talking a little bit about Gene Autry's Cowboy Code anyway. But it was interesting. What I found for number 7, Ride for the Brand, was really it's about being loyal to your employer. And I thought that was interesting once I understood the Cowboy Code speak for what that was. I appreciated it, and I just wanted to add that to the discussion, that for those who may be listening or watching and had the same reaction I did, what the heck does number 7 mean, that's what I found out.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this. And I mean that. To anybody who wants to give you a hard time about the few hundred bucks it costs to print a bill, it's a silly criticism. That's what we do here. We bring forth ideas, we talk about them, and it costs a little bit of money. That's the price we pay for having a legislature. My question is, when I read these principles, and this is a serious question, what is Western about these ideas? I don't think there's anything uniquely Western about be tough but fair, or any of these other things, except maybe ride for the brand, which probably wouldn't make sense to folks east of the Mississippi. But I guess that's just a real question for you. These strike me as principles that good people all over the country live their lives by.
Thank you for the question, Representative Garrett, Co-Speaker Hunt, and Co-Speaker Olson. The Western theme, or the Western motif of this bill, comes out of a book. I don't believe there's anything inherently Western, about living each day with courage. The book describes the pioneers and folks that would have this as their code. I will tell you the training course I was at was the Western Legislative Leadership Conference, so that has the word Western in it, so I thought that was appropriate. But I would hope people throughout the United States and around the world would use these principles to live by.
Anyone else? I also find it interesting that as you read, actually, volume one of Louis L'Amour books, just a few chapters into the book, you find writing for the brand. And that sets the entire tone for all the volumes for good guys versus bad guys, and to maintain, I believe, those 10 ethics that you've identified from James Owen.
Thank you. I'm trying very hard to use principle number 8 here, but I'm going to elaborate on ride the brand for a little bit. That can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. It can mean representing your constituents when you're here. It can mean looking out for what's best for the state of Oregon when you're here. We all do that to some extent in pieces of legislation. We oftentimes talk about take economic development, how we want to make sure those dollars are spent in Oregon to Oregonians. That can mean party stuff. It can mean your family. It can mean your faith. It can mean a lot of things. The fact is, most of us that are here have a set of principles and what we believe in, and we follow those every day. And Ride for the Brand, in my mind, is a combination of all those things.
Okay, very good. Anything else? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been looking at this list and trying to see what about it I find disturbing, and I do, and I'd like to hear what Representative Freeman's thoughts are about this issue. We've been talking about number 7 quite a lot, and that it, as I understand it, it suggests loyalty to an employer. And that's what I understood Representative Wingard's comments to mean. I don't see anything in here that talks about, let me put it a different way. This appears to be the statement for the rugged individualist who is working in a way of trying to coordinate his situation with those of other people. And maybe Ride for the Brand is the closest one that deviates from that particular idea. I don't see anything in here that deals with issues of helping taking care of other people, dealing with the issue of caring for those who are less able, or the issues that this legislature works on a lot as we deal with the kinds of ways in which people in a society like ours are interdependent upon each other. The only thing that seems to relate to that at least a little bit is this idea of number 7, Ride for the Brand. Do you have any thoughts about that, or maybe we ought to add a number 11 that deals with that kind of issue?
Thank you, Representative Barnhart, Representative Olson, or Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Hunt. Having the opportunity this session to serve as one of the co-chairs on the Human Service Subcommittee, I can tell you there's several of these principles that I find very valuable in dealing with what is that population that is the most vulnerable here in the state of Oregon. Everything from be tough but be fair. When you make a promise, keep it. I think we all owe a promise to this group of people to take care of them. The fact that we've started programs, that we should always finish what you start, would pertain to that. I take pride in the number of hours and the amount of work that I put into learning about that particular issue and helping find ways to serve that population you describe. I've sat through hours of public testimony that quite honestly takes a ton of courage for the people that come speak to us and for us to understand clearly what it is their needs are. The fact that some things are not for sale means to me that regardless of what could be input from particular special interest groups. We have an obligation to take care of certain members of our society, and that isn't for sale. We're going to do that. So I think there's many things on here that pertain to exactly the sentiments that you're talking of.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Freeman.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to testify regarding this bill? So we're going to close public hearing on HCR 14, and we're going to open up a work session on HCR 14.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 14 to the floor with the recommendation that it be adopted.
Chair Hunt moves HCR 14 to the floor with the recommendation that it be adopted. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Berger? Representative Freeman?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
HCR 14 passes and close a work session on HCR 14. And Representative Freeman, you're going to carry them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Come on.
This going to open up a work session on HCR 13. Representative McClain. Yes, would you please? Thank you.
HCR 13. Mr. Chairman, commemorates the city of Eagle Point on its 100th anniversary.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson and Co-Chair Hunt. My name is Mike McClain. I'm from Crook County, Oregon. I represent House District 55, which spans the most beautiful part of Oregon, clear from Crook County down to the California border over to Eagle Point, and includes upper north Jackson County, the upper Rogue area, including Crater Lake. I have sitting with me at the table Jonathan Bilden, who is a member of the Eagle Point City Council and a former chair of the school board in Eagle Point in the upper Rogue area, District 9. I want to give credit to Councillor Bilden for authoring House Concurrent Resolution 13 in working tirelessly on behalf of the people of Eagle Point ever since he was in high school and continuing on to this day. I represent Eagle Point and have the privilege to do so in this legislature. I'm a freshman, and so for me to be able to put forth my first piece of legislation being that which recognizes the centennial celebration of Eagle Point and the contribution it's made to Jackson County and the state of Oregon, it was a distinct honor. But with that, I'm going to hand the mic over to Councillor Bilden to share a little bit about the centennial celebration at Eagle Point.
Thank you, Mr. Representative. Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair, members of the committee, I have the privilege of now
serving. You identify yourself.
Oh, I'm Jonathan Bilden from Eagle Point, Oregon, and I have the privilege now of serving just under 3 months on the Eagle Point City Council, and the youngest by many, many years, and have got a running start, have serving on the school board there to help lead our centennial celebration this year. We were founded, obviously, in 1911 along the military road between Jacksonville, Oregon, and Fort Klamath in the Cascades. And it was founded around a what is now the oldest water-powered flour mill west of the Mississippi, which is still operating to this day with the stones imported from France that are 157 years old. So it's still operating, and now the owner of that mill is our mayor of our city. We kicked off our centennial this year, which turned out to be a glorious sunny day in February with a brand new centennial plaza, which is actually leading to our economic development in downtown and will lead into our festive 4th of July parade and festivities, which is one of the largest actually in Jackson County for a little town of 5,600 people. Also, we one of the fastest growing by percentages cities in Oregon with about a 76% growth rate in the last decade, which is also centered around our internationally recognized golf course designed by Robert Trent Jones, which has seen, helped our economy in Eagle Point really grow and transition to from more of a timber-based to more of a tourism and bedroom community. So we are really excited by what's going on and the different involvement from around the county and our region and statewide for the support for our centennial and the different contributions our city has helped with. One more stat is that we actually have one of three national cemeteries, VA national cemeteries in our city, and was founded after Camp White disbanded, which is a training facility for World War II. And actually many buildings from that ended up starting a lot of our school district projects, which we are now transitioning finally after many years into more stable buildings. So, and I appreciate this opportunity and just so happen to be in the Capitol today. So.
Well, and I do want to say thank you again for hearing this House concurrent resolution. Eagle Point is a beautiful city. I look forward to seeing you all there at Centennial Park and also playing the golf course. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Are there any questions? Okay, well, thank you very much. We're going to close a public hearing on HCR 13. We're going to open up a work session on HCR 13.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 13 to the floor with the recommendation that it be adopted.
Chair Hunt moves HCR 13 to the floor with the recommendation that it be adopted. Is there further discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Wingard.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make it clear for freshman members that it is not conducive to collecting votes for a bill to claim that your district is the most beautiful one in the state. But because he's new, I'm going to overlook that and support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Wingard, for pointing that out. is there anyone else? Okay. Wilson. Amy, if you'd call the roll, please.
Aye.
Including beautiful
Representative Freeman.
I'll give you parts.
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Wingard?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. HCR 13 passes, and we'll have close the work session on HCR 13, and Representative McClain, you'll carry the bill then?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to open up a public hearing on HR 1. Yes, would you please?
Mr. Chairman, H.R. 1 commemorates the city of Gladstone on its 100th anniversary.
Is not the most beautiful.
Would you like to say that on the record?
Mr. Chairman, you have two amendments for the H.R. 1. Also, the dash 1 adds a whereas on quality schools. The dash 2 adds a whereas on the Gladstone Center for Children and Families.
No, I haven't.
Chair Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Representative Dave Hunt. Clearly, Representative McClain has never been to the place where the Clackamas and Willamette Rivers come together in the city of Gladstone and seen the inherent beauty there. I think he was trying to overreach a little bit because the city of Eagle Point is actually fairly young because according to my records, Eagle Point was founded on February 16th, 1911. Gladstone, however, was founded on January 10th, 1911, so a full 5 weeks older and much, much longer history. It's a privilege for me to join with one of our city's distinguished citizens. Judy Irvin has served on the Gladstone City Council for a little bit longer than 3 months.
Yes.
And also serves on our Clackamas Community College board, so she's one of those people who wears two elected hats. She's here with her husband, Bob, who is behind me. I think one of the nice things about Gladstone, some deep history that Judy may talk about, but also, as you'll see in the Dash 2 amendments, very much on the cutting edge in the current time, and really has developed just in the last couple of years a center for children and families that really has become not just a statewide but a national model in terms of bringing together services for kids, Head Start and full-day kindergarten and Healthy Start and all kinds of services for kids and families. There's a relief nursery that's happening in that same building and a new health clinic that has just opened up within the last year. Really a one-stop shop in what was an old abandoned grocery store, very much trying to break down walls between different agencies and realize cost efficiencies, delivering services for kids and families. So rich history, rich present, and I'm happy to yield to Councilor Irvin.
Thank you very much, and I would like to thank Representative Hunt and Senator Olson for, is this microphone on?
Yeah,
I guess it is. All right. For sponsoring this bill. I am Judith Irvin. Spelling of last name is with an E-R-V-I-N. And I have been a city councilor in Gladstone since 1991, a little bit more than 3 months. Our mayor, Wade Byers, was unable to be here. He sends his regrets and also his thanks for sponsoring this bill and bringing it before the committee. Gladstone is a very unique community, and when I read through the resolution, I was very pleased with the factual statements, the whereas statements in the resolution, and particularly pleased with the amendments that I saw today regarding the school contributions and specifically our Center for Children and Families. And Representative Hunt did share with you that our center is not only a model for the state of Oregon, but it is a national model, and we have people from all over the nation coming to see what we have to offer. But nonetheless, I'm here to speak in favor of the resolution to get back on track here. And when I read through the resolution, we were incorporated specifically, I thought, what took us so long? Because the first white settlers came to this area in Gladstone in 1792. And in 1806, the Clackamas Falls Indians, which later became the Clackamas Indians, met with William Clark, whom I'm sure you have heard of, as part of his expedition. And in 1812, a winter trading post was established at Willamette Falls, which is just a little bit downstream from where Gladstone sits today. In 1843, the provisional government at Champoig was established, and there were thousands of Indians attending that ceremony. Within a few short years, however, because of intermittent fever epidemics, the population decreased considerably. And in the 1840s, all Indians were removed by force to the Grand Ronde Reservation. Many tribes and many nations were included in that removal, and many of them still exist today. And we have a very fine relationship in Gladstone with the Grand Ronde nations and work closely with them in many of our projects. In the 1840s, a settlement known as Clackamas City was established, and that is where Gladstone sits today. And I brought, I don't know how many cities have their own historian, but we have a very noted historian, Herbert K. Beals, who's been recognized by many agencies and nations. And this is a map out of his first volume, and right now he has published 3 volumes in the history of our city, and it shows the Willamette River coming down here and the Clackamas River here. And this area north of the Clackamas River is where Gladstone sits today. And some of these little dots here on the map show where the nations, Indian nations, had settlements. But we go back a long, long time. In 1860, the Clackamas County Fair was first held in Gladstone, what is now Gladstone. And it was located, the entrance was located at the site of a spreading maple tree, which is referred to locally as our powwow tree and is part of our logo in the city. and the first Oregon State Fair was on that same site. We no longer have the Oregon State Fair, but we still have the maple tree. And it's in pretty sad shape, but it exists. So nonetheless, the city was not founded until 1911 by Judge Harvey Cross. And his great-grandson just retired as our city attorney. And I'm sorry he couldn't be here today to talk about some of the history as he knows it. Gladstone was named after the English Prime Minister for Queen Victoria, whom you've heard of. And Harvey Cross greatly admired the Prime Minister, and so that's why he gave the name to Gladstone. It took from our earliest settlements until 1911, because I think Harvey Cross was a very, very busy man, and he just didn't have time to sit down and plat out the city and name the streets and get everything organized to the point where we could be founded. During that time, he served as a state senator here in Salem in 1890, and in 1919, he was a representative at this august body. After that, he was a judge, now known as a county commissioner. And so he was a very, very busy man, as I say, and he didn't get around to getting us established until 1911. But we've been around a long, long time. That concludes my historical part. In your resolution, you comment about the whereas in the sections. You comment about the Chautauqua Festival. Chautauqua is a gathering of notables that come and speak about various subjects. Billy Sunday, William Jennings Bryan, these are some of the names that came and spoke at past Chautauquas. It quit functioning in 1927. This year, to celebrate our centennial, we are reinstituting that. Our centennial is a year-long event, and we hope to have a lot of the events. Well, they're on our website, but we hope to have a lot of the events published for you so you can come up and share some of the excitement that's going on. But thank you very much for sponsoring this resolution.
Okay. Questions? Senator Olson, you want to come up and plug in, too, while these two are up here? Then we'll open up questions for all three of you.
Thank you.
Hello, how are you? Thank you, Coach Olson. Yeah, Coach Olson, that's me. I think I'm talking to myself. And Coach Hovey and committee members, thank you very much for having me here. It's just an honor to be able to speak today in support of and co-sponsor House Resolution 1. The city of Gladstone has a rich and unique history in our state. It actually is in my district, Senate District 20. It's Gladstone, Oregon City, Canby. In its 100th year, the citizens of Gladstone, as we speak, are celebrating the town's heritage. Gladstone is often considered a quiet part of Oregon's larger metropolitan area. However, Gladstone holds roots in our state that grow very deep. Prior to becoming incorporated, the city was home of the very first Oregon State Fair, as mentioned earlier. The city is also home to the Chautauqua Festival, held in August of each year, a festival commemorating a long-standing tradition of spreading culture, education, and entertainment to sometimes more isolated rural communities across the country. I support this resolution, and I ask that the members of this honorable committee to support Resolution 1 with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, gentlemen.
Committee members, any questions? Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm going to close a public hearing on H.R. 1 and open up a work session on H.R. 1.
Mr. Chair, just a point of order. I'm just curious as to what, really just curious, why is one of these an H.R. and one is an H.C.R.? What's the difference?
Just one moment. Stand by.
Gladstone get to have a centennial, but Eagle Point only gets the 100th anniversary.
Representative Garrett, stand by. Just a moment. Stand fast.
Yeah, talk less, say more.
Mr. Chairman, I would say what many of the witnesses say, we'll get an answer to you as quickly as we can.
I'll expect that.
I don't believe that a House resolution goes to the Senate for consideration, so it's something that you and in your powers as the House of Representatives, you can do a measure, and it'll go all the way through the process just in the House. A concurrent resolution must be voted on by both chambers.
That is the answer, Mr. Chairman.
That is the answer.
Although under duress, I will be an aye vote.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply wanted to note the youngsters in the room today. 100 years, of course, is an interesting landmark, but it fails really to stand up to the history of other parts of the state, including areas in my district. Eugene, 1863, Springfield, 1885, Brownsville, 1895, North Brownsville, 1858, and Amelia, 1858, the towns that make up Brownsville today.
Where's the resolution, Representative?
Creswell, 1909, which beats out Gladstone by a couple of years, and Coburg, 1893. And I also would note that I had a short conversation with Representative Freeman about his hometown, and it turns out that Oakland was actually incorporated in 1872. So I would say we're very glad to welcome the newcomer, Gladstone, to his 100th birthday.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Chair,
Representative.
Would Representative Barnhart please regale the committee with what those festivities were like at the founding of those cities in his district? I love stories about the 1800s.
My memory that far back is sparse.
Okay, I see. Judy, thank you, and welcome to
And Mr. Chair, if I may, we have our fun, but I do intend to support the resolution. I'm so pleased that you brought us the information that you brought us today.
That's exactly why I brought it. Because
thank
I
you.
Knew that there were quite a few towns older than
us. Okay.
Are we in a work session?
We are in a work session.
I would move, if I may, both the dash one and the dash two amendments to H.R. 1.
Chair Hunt moves the dash ones and dash twos to H.R. 1. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so move.
Oh, we have to vote separately.
No.
We don't?
We're going.
Mr. Chair, I move H.R. 1 as amended to the floor with a recommendation that it be adopted.
Chair Hunt moves H.R. 1 as amended to the floor with a recommendation that it be adopted. Yes.
I would simply note, Mr. Chair, that this is probably a very wise use of the HR designation. It means that those pesky people over in the Senate don't have any say in whether this passes or not.
Wow. Okay. This is aggressive today.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure everyone knows it's with the dash one and the dash two.
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Stembridge. Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Freeman?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. HCR 1, as amended, is passed. And we close the work session on HCR 1, or correction, HR 1. And you'll carry them?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Let's see. Let's open a work session on House Bill 3576.
You want to open a hearing? You want just a hearing on that one?
We're just going to have a hearing.
Hearing. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3576, for the purposes of determining required habitation within a district required for serving as a state representative or senator, directs the Secretary of State to consider the district in which the candidate is registered to vote.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do note that this is a public hearing and not a work session. I will note that this bill may appear to be... Oh, and I am State Representative Paul Holvey, District 8, speaking on behalf of this bill. This bill came out of an experience that I had during the last campaign cycle, the election cycle, and I brought this bill forward in an effort to clarify who was eligible to be a candidate for state representative or state senator for the Legislative Assembly in the state of Oregon. The original concept was to require that someone running for this position be registered to vote in that same district during the 1 year previous that is required by the Constitution to be an inhabitant. Having requested that drafting, Legislative Council felt that it violated the Constitution in that it would be more restrictive on the Constitution. So it as I continued to try to work through this, I tried to figure out how someone could actually register in a different district and be qualified to run for office of a state representative or a state senator without violating the law. And appears that someone can actually register in a different district in which they inhabit it and be qualified to run for office, which presents some curious problems down the road, because if in fact a person did that and won the election, they would not be able to be seated in that office, which would present some further complications to our election cycle. I will note that when you fill out a voter registration card, it does ask you where you live, and you attest to that under a penalty of a felony, I do believe, if you state so incorrectly. So having gone through that, this bill does represent a little frustration that Legislative Council could not figure out a way to accomplish this, and it appears to me that our statutes do not give the Secretary of State adequate direction on defining what an inhabitant means in our Constitution. And I'm hopeful that I will be able to bring back an amendment to this bill in working with the Elections Division and Legislative Council to actually have the work session that you referred to earlier on this bill. It still is troubling to me that someone can be registered and actually vote in a different district in that time frame when you're supposed to be an inhabitant of the district that you are running for. And actually, that appears to be the case today. So with that, I will conclude my testimony and hope that I'll be able to get through the hurdles with Legislative Council and Elections Division to come back with a bill that can be worked. Thank you very much, and I might be able to answer a question or two, and I do note that the Elections Division is in the audience as well, who may or may not want to answer any questions on this either.
Okay. Committee members, just for your information, make correction here. I initially opened this up as a work session. It wasn't scheduled for that, and we are currently in a public hearing. So, Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holby, I'm a little bit lost. Can you help me understand what the problem is and walk me through how a person is able to register and run and not serve and all that? The way I understand the law is you have to live in the district for a year in order to qualify to be able to run and to take the seat. But it sounds like there's a loophole in there, and I'd just like you to explain this for me.
Thank you for the question, Representative Wingert. I don't know that I can answer that question. I do note that the Constitution does require that year of inhabitancy prior to run. I think it says no person shall be a representative who at the time of election has not been for 1 year next preceding the election an inhabitant of the district from which the representative may be chosen. That's in the Constitution. However, that doesn't actually speak to, as I understand it, candidacy for that. So someone could actually register and have their, in this particular case, was actually registered in that time frame, voted in that time frame, and got a driver's license in that time frame in a different district, but after providing an affidavit that they were actually an inhabitant of the district, then qualified to become a candidate. And at that point, they are on the ballot, and we go forward. My understanding of it, I'm trying to get legislative council doesn't quite understand how this happens either, but it does, and I think part of it is that the Secretary of State's office probably cannot challenge a statement made by somebody that they're an inhabitant of the district under the guidelines of the Constitution, because it would be more restrictive than the Constitution, actually, to say, well, we're going to take this evidence over this evidence, and they don't feel they have the direction to do that. And the question is, can the legislature provide that statutory direction to the Secretary of State without violating the Constitution? That's my understanding of the dilemma that I face and in trying to solve this problem.
Representative Gura.
So my question would have been why this bill doesn't say a person who is registered to vote in any other district within 1 year prior to the election shall not be considered an inhabitant. And I guess is the problem, as you said, that council has interpreted that to be more restrictive than the Constitution, and therefore we can't define inhabitant in that way?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Garrett. That actually does sort of sum up my original request, mm-hmm. and having looked at it, this is what they came back with because of the concern of being more restrictive than the Constitution. I'm not sure I agree with that interpretation, but I am left with the guidance of legislative counsel on this, and I know that I have spoken with the Elections Division about this, and they're going to continue to work with legislative counsel to perhaps see if there is some way for us to give a clear definition of inhabitants when it comes to election, because it does present some troubling problems, you know, because it seems that somebody could actually game the Constitution on inhabitancy and just say, I am an inhabitant and qualify to be on the ballot, and in fact, then they don't end up being elected. So that was a long-winded answer to your question. I don't know if I actually answered it. Thank you.
Further.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that we ought to be able, as a legislature, to statutorily prescribe what evidence of inhabitancy is to be considered and what's not. And so if it's a question of uncertainty about what we can do under the Constitution, I would support doing as much as we think we can and let it be challenged.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Garrett, I appreciate that, and I have noted that there are some differences in qualifications to register to vote as opposed to being qualified to be a candidate, and I was trying to segregate those two definitions for this specific purpose, and albeit it might apply to other candidacies across public offices in Oregon, this particular draft is nearly aimed at the legislature, because as you may know, in federal elected offices in the state of Oregon, some of our senators and congressmen may actually be registered in Washington, D.C. to vote. Which I didn't really know either. Hopefully we'll come back to you if I get the opportunity to bring it back in a work session. If we can find an amendment that addresses this issue, I will be requesting that work session.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Representative Holby, thank you. Steve, are you interested in weighing in on this?
West number 8, do you know the story?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Steve Trout, State Election Director, and Representative Holvey did a great job explaining the nuances involved here, and we had a good meeting here last week, and I understand the points he's trying to, the changes he's trying to come about with, and so we just need to sit down with Ledge Council and figure out, you know, what we can do legally, because there's different things, election administration that we could try to achieve his policy objectives, and I just need to include legislative counsel in there as well, because I'm not familiar with the evidence or the arguments that they supplied to the representative at the drafting of the bill. So I think we can, I'm hopeful that we can come up with something to help better define the parameters for this situation.
Chair Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, I realize you haven't been at the Elections Division for a long period of time, but are you aware of any other circumstances where a candidate for office has actually not just been registered in another district, but actually voted in another district within 12 months of seeking office in a different district? Is this a unique problem?
Mr. Chair, in my experience, this is the first time that it has come up. I know that we have people that are registered in districts that they do not inhabit. But college students, some people that have vacation homes that one spouse is registered where their residence is, and one is registered where their other home is, so that they can vote on measures there, which under the current law is permissible. But with respect to this situation, this is the first one I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anyone else want to testify? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3576, and we're adjourned. Oh.
We'll do it next time.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay.